Good morning. It's really good to be here this morning. You get me this morning instead of Terry. Terry is at HUB camp enjoying a weekend with about 150 or so of our members. So we want to be remembering them as they travel back this afternoon on their way back to Abilene. I love a good story. Always have and always will love a good story. It doesn't matter what form it's in, if it's a children's book or if it's a movie or a television show or a novel. I love a good story. Years ago when Harper was still really little, before she was one, somebody gave us a children's book. And it was about this big. It was a huge, one of these huge books. You know, these cardboard, they're an inch and a half thick pages. And, you know, I got that thing out and I looked at it and it was called The Clock. It's like, oh, okay, the clock. This is a clock. All right. The clock has numbers. Fascinating. The clock says tick. The clock says talk. The end, are you kidding me? I mean, it was a ridiculous book. I didn't like anything about it. I didn't like the fact that it was like $20 on the back where it said it was $20. I didn't like the fact that it was about a clock. I didn't like the fact that it was the size of a suitcase and that Harper wanted to read it all the time. But more importantly, I didn't like it because it didn't have a good story. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't say anything. To me, a good story needs to have a message. It needs to say something. It needs to be about something. It doesn't matter what form it's in, it needs to go somewhere. How many of you would agree? And some of my favorite stories are stories about truth and justice and righting wrongs. Whether they're movies or television shows, I love stories that are searches for truth, that are searches for justice, that are interesting, that have plot twists and developments and drama that unfolds as the story goes along. Those are the kind of stories that I enjoy. And you know what? It doesn't matter if you know the ending of the story. When I first went to see Titanic, I thought to myself, how good can this be? I mean, spoiler alert, right? The ship sinks. We all know where this is headed. But what made the story interesting was the drama that took place during the movie that led to the end, that led up to the events that we all know happened. The story that we look at this morning, the story I want to share with you, is a lot like that. We all know where it's going. We all know what the end is going to be. And it's a story that if we overlook, we miss its message. In John chapter 18, we find Jesus in front of Pilate. Now, John chooses to give a lot of information, a lot of detail in this story that a lot of the other gospel writers do not. And the question is, why? So many times we skip over this story. We know what's going to happen. We know what the verdict's going to be. Jesus himself knew what the verdict was going to be. And so we skip over it. We don't talk very much about it. And when we do, we miss its message. There is a reason that John included this in his gospel. There is something that John wanted to say with this story and the reason that he included it in his letter. There's something important going on here. Terry has been leading us along the journey of Christ to the cross. And throughout this journey, we've seen all kinds of incredible things happen. We've seen passion. We've seen loyalty and betrayal. We've seen deceit, denial, and a distortion of the legal system. We've seen pain and we've seen hurt. In this story, we've seen humanity at its worst and most vile in a story that ultimately leads to its salvation. In the story of Christ, ultimately, we have seen the need for it, the necessity for it. And so this morning, as we look at John 18 and we look at Jesus before Pilate, we learn something about what is at the heart of Jesus' journey. Truth. The truth about the Jews. The truth about who Jesus is and what his purpose is. Pilate famously utters this question, "What is truth?" in a mocking way. That is a question, I think, that is at the heart of Jesus' story. We pick up our story in chapter 18 as they arrive at Pilate's headquarters. The betrayal and treachery of Judas has allowed things to move pretty quickly for the Jews. Things are going their way. They have tried, they have convicted, they have found guilty, and they have sentenced Jesus to death for blasphemy. They are excited about this. Things are going their way. Things are moving faster than they could have dreamed. And so now they find themselves in a position. They want to put Jesus to death, preferably by stoning, as was their custom. But they knew they couldn't do it. There was a hitch in their get-along, as we might say. Roman law prevented them from doing so. The Romans were all about letting the people they ruled do whatever they wanted. You guys abide by your own laws, do whatever you want, whatever keeps the people happy, except for one thing. They would not allow people to carry out death sentences. That was a right that they held solely for themselves. And so that is why we find the Jews rushing off to Pilate for a sentence. Look with me in verse 18. And then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. And it was early morning. Early morning. Early in the New Testament meant the fourth watch. It meant from 3 to 6 a.m. At our house, we call it the second watch. Or otherwise, hey, it's your turn. Get up and check Liam. And I got to tell you, that is an ugly time of the day. Amen? Nobody wants to be up from 3 to 6 a.m. We hear him crying on the monitor, and I get out of bed, and I'm tired, and I'm fuzzy-headed, and I'm navigating the minefield, otherwise known as toys, in our living room, trying to get to his room. And I get there, and he's fussy, and he's cranky, and he's wanting to eat, and I've got to wait for it to warm up, and it's not a happy time of the day. And so my question is, why do the Jews do this? Why can't they wait? Why do they immediately go to Pilate's house for a sentencing? Doesn't that seem like a bit of a risk to you? Doesn't it seem like they would want to wait until maybe Pilate would be in a more favorable mood to bring this case that is so important to him? One of the reasons I think they did this is that it didn't matter. They thought they had this signed, sealed, and delivered. They thought there was no way Pilate would turn him down because they have a history with Pilate, and it's a rocky one. Pilate, in his early years, was a Roman soldier fighting on the frontier, and then he married Claudia. Claudia's father was Tiberius, and he decided that his daughter did not need to be married to a soldier fighting in the front, and so he makes Pilate governor of Judea. Pilate is a soldier, and he thinks like a soldier, and he's going to behave like a soldier and treat people like a soldier would. There was a custom, all the governors beforehand made a practice of being nice to the Jews. They would come into the city with their standards, usually standards that had their emblems on them, and they would set them up in cities where they ruled. However, they didn't do that because they knew that the Jews would be upset. It would be a lot like maybe somebody coming in here with a Nazi flag or something similar. It was offensive to the Jews. It would make them angry, and so many of the governors wouldn't do it. Pilate saw this as weakness. He disdained that practice and thought, you know what, they can get over it. And so in the middle of the night, he brings his army in with their standards, and he sets them up in the palace. Early that next day, they see it, and they're outraged. They're offended, and thousands of citizens come rushing, and they come to and demand that they be taken down. And Pilate refuses, and they're there for several days laying prostrate until finally he sends out soldiers with spears, and they say, at the point of death, you will leave. And to his surprise, the Jews bare their necks, and they say, we would rather die than to suffer this outrage. So Pilate gives in and has them removed. The Jews won a little bit of power that day. The straw that finally broke the camel's back in all of the different things that happened in their history was Pilate set up these big shields in his palace, these big votive shields, also extremely offensive to the Jews. They went and they demanded they be taken down, and he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And so they wrote to the emperor. The emperor was furious at Pilate. Why do you risk upsetting the Jews? Why would you risk them stopping their production? They are productive people. They are giving back. They're paying their taxes. They're doing everything. Why would you risk upsetting that? Why would you risk them revolting and coming to an uprising. Why would you do that? And so he rebukes Pilate publicly and orders these things be taken down. A big black eye for Pilate. Pilate despises the Jews, but he also fears them because they have power. And he hates them for it. And the Jews know it. So they don't care what time of day it is. They don't care when they're coming to him. They think he's going to do whatever they want because he can't risk upsetting them. He can't risk making them angry. He's going to just give them whatever they want. So they don't care. And besides, they have a Passover to get to. They have some feasts to preside over, right? They've got to get this business out of the way so they can get over to their meal. Jesus was led into the temple, but they themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. Does this strike anybody else as ridiculously ironic? Does this strike anyone else as the craziest thing you've ever heard? They wouldn't enter Pilate's headquarters because they didn't want to be defiled because the Passover was that day. We know what the Passover was, right? A celebration of God's goodness. A celebration of God's mercy. A celebration of the fact that God looked upon His people who were in captivity and He set them free. The very thing they're denying Christ. Grace. Mercy, freedom. But they don't want to be defiled. They don't want to go into this man's home, this Gentile's home, and defile themselves so that they can go and eat the Passover. But they don't care anything about the defilement of their souls by their actions against Christ. The truth about the Jews is they may seem pious on the outside. They may go to their Passover meal and they may stand up and administer the Passover, and they may do all these sacrifices, and they may be a religious pillar in the community. But the truth is, their actions tell the real story. You see, the danger here is we may come and we may do one thing and we may put on a good show, but in our hearts, we are far away from God and where we need to be. In a group a long time ago, where I was a youth minister, we had a Bible study at my house, and there was a gentleman, a boy who came, and he was someone that I looked to as a leader of our group. I thought he was a strong pillar in our group, and I relied on him a lot, and I thought, this kid has got it together. And so we had this Bible study, and there were a lot of kids that came over, and there were some visitors there from the school that he went to, and we had a good time, a good study. And after it was over, I was talking to some of them who were there with me, and I was asking them what they thought, and they were like, you know, it was great. We had a great time. It was a really good discussion. It felt like a really safe place to just be able to talk about what we think. But we were a little surprised to see this guy there. You see, he was being one thing for us and something completely different in the rest of his life. His actions and the things that he engaged in outside of church made them think there's no possible way he would be a Christian. That's what's going on with the Jews. They want to get to the Passover, yet they are doing something incredibly ungodly. We need to be careful that we don't do the same thing. We need to be careful that instead of just attending church, we be the church. Because it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what the elders think. It doesn't matter what the people around you think you are. It only matters what God sees in you. And so Pilate goes outside. Pilate goes outside to them and he says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" You know, I can't imagine he's very happy. At least in my early morning hours, I look down at his face and he's grinning at me and chuckling at me, and I think, oh, you know what? It's worth it. 3 a.m. ain't so bad. I can't imagine Pilate coming out and seeing the face of the Jews, the people he despises, is in a good mood. And he begins this in the, you know, very typical way, the way you would usually expect a trial to start. What accusations do you bring against this man? And it really seems like the Jews are caught off guard. It really seems like they completely expected a blank check for them. As though they would come in and say, hey, you know, we've just got this man, just give us what we want and we'll be on our way. But Pilate isn't going for that. And so they're caught off guard without an acceptable charge, and we all know they can't be honest. Because one, Pilate wouldn't care. Blasphemy? Who cares? I don't believe in God anyway. Please, go take care of this of yourself. He would see them for who they were, jealous and envious of Jesus. And so they come up with what has to be the lamest excuse or charge ever. Well, if this man were not doing evil, we wouldn't be here, would we? Really? Really? That's the best you got? Like, come on, guys, just take my word for it. We're here, aren't we? Isn't that good enough? Isn't that essentially what they're saying? If this man were not doing evil, we wouldn't be here. And so Pilate responds in kind. He says, well, then take him yourself. If you know that there's such a reason and you're not, you know, wanting to share it with me, just take him away and judge him for yourself, knowing that they couldn't do it. Knowing that they couldn't do so. To his credit, he's not having any of it. He wants to hear them say why they're there. And so they admit it. We're here because it's not lawful for us to do so. I can almost imagine if this were me and Pilate responded to me this way, just take him away and judge him yourself. I'd be like, it's not really lawful for me to do it. You know, these are proud people, and they have to admit to Pilate that they have no right to do this. And so Pilate hears their accusation. John omits what accusations and charges they bring, but we can find them in Luke chapter 23. They come up with three things. I don't know if they had these beforehand. It looks like they would have said it, or maybe they just kind of made them up on the spot. But they said, he's perverting the nation, he's forbidding the giving of tribute to Caesar, and he's saying that he himself is a king. It's obvious from Pilate's questioning of Jesus which one he considers to be serious. Pilate goes back into his headquarters and calls Jesus and says to him, are you the king of the Jews? The claim of kingship is a serious matter. It's an act of treason against Rome. And it's interesting, if you look at this, when he says, are you, there's an emphasis in the Greek on the word you. Are you the king of the Jews? Think about what Pilate is seeing right now. We think of Jesus as our Lord and Savior, as our King. Pilate is seeing him as this ragged man who probably hasn't eaten for a few days. He probably hasn't bathed for a few days. He's hungry. He's tired. He's humble. He is not acting like a king. He does not look like a king. And Pilate is going, are you the king of the Jews? He can't believe what he's seeing, but he has to take it seriously. And so Jesus answers him in a very clever way. Do you say this of your own accord? Or did others say it to you about me? Jesus wants to know something. Pilate, is this something that you know yourself? Or are you going on the word of others? Is this an official charge of Rome against me? Or is it hearsay? And Pilate answers quickly, am I a Jew? Am I a Jew? It is your own nation and the chief priests that have delivered you over to me. He's saying, of course not. This isn't from me. Your own people have delivered you over. And then, in logic that sounds a lot like what the Jews were using, he says, so what did you do? They're here. They've delivered you over to me, so you must have done something. And Jesus' answer is what is really important to us this morning. It reveals the truth about his story, the truth about his nature. Jesus answered and said, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews, but my kingdom is not of this world. Throughout the Gospel of John, there has been an emphasis on Jesus' otherworldliness. In chapter 3, verse 31, John the Baptist is speaking about the one who comes, and he says, he who comes is from above and is above all. Jesus said in chapter 8, verse 23, you are from below and I am from above. You are of this world. I am not of this world. In verse 42 of the same chapter, he says, if God were your father, you would love me. For I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but He sent me. And His kingdom is the same. In chapter 15, verse 19, Jesus tells His followers that they have been chosen out of the world and are no longer a part of it. There is a message here for us. The truth of our nature, the truth of the nature of the kingdom of God is not worldly, but heavenly. Paul said we are ambassadors for Christ. We are people who are not from here, but are witnessing to this world. Peter said that we are resident aliens, people who are residing in a land to which we do not belong. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. This is a really incredible reply, because what he's saying here is you have nothing to fear. Pilate, you have nothing to fear. I know that you're afraid someone making a claim to kingship is going to try to take power and territory, but our kingdom is not about that. Our kingdom is about humility and service. I know that you're worried about a power struggle, about military action being taken, but Pilate, if that were true, my people would have been fighting all along, but they haven't. We've been going around and we've been feeding people and we've been taking care of the sick and the homeless. That's what we've been doing. And he reveals something about our purpose. The truth about our purpose. Pilate listens to this and he says, So you're saying you are a king. See, Pilate has to be careful, because Jesus, even though he's saying my kingdom is not of this world, is still persisting in saying that he has a kingdom. And so he says, you are a king. And what Jesus says next is a beautiful declaration of his purpose. You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into this world, to bear witness to the truth. I have come to bear witness to the truth. Not to find truth and to assert control over it, but to show this world what truth really is. His purpose is the same as our purpose. To be in this world, but not of it. To be in this world, living with purpose, moving in this world as God moved in this world, for its salvation. Not with our heads down, waiting for the time when we can leave and just, as long, if we could just hang on and just make it, we can go away someday. But to live here, to bear witness to the truth that Jesus was the Son of God, and that He is here to offer salvation. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. In John chapter 10, Jesus talked about being the good shepherd. And all sheep who listen to my voice will obey me. And the good shepherd will lay down his life for the sheep. Jesus is saying there is a choice. There are going to be those who listen to my voice, and they are going to be of the truth. And then there are going to be those who do not listen to my voice, who do not listen to the truth, and they are not a part of it. It is almost as though he's offering Pilate this choice. Will you listen to truth that is standing right in front of you? And then famously, Pilate comes back with the mocking reply, what is truth? What is truth? Isn't this something we hear a lot today? Truth is relative. Truth is whatever you want it to be. For Pilate, truth was whoever carried the biggest sword. For Pilate, truth was whatever the people in power wanted it to be. For the Jews, truth was what they needed it to be to get what they wanted. They didn't care about what truth actually was. That it was standing in front of them the whole time. The truth is, I wonder if Pilate would have been so mocking had he known what was before him. Had he known what was about to happen, because the truth is, Jesus was the Son of God. The truth is that Jesus came to this earth and he healed people. He defied gravity by walking on water. He brought people back up from the grave. The truth is that Jesus went to his death knowingly, willingly pouring out his blood. And the truth is, death couldn't hold him. The truth is, Jesus rose from the dead. The truth is that Jesus didn't stay dead so he could give us hope. He could offer us salvation. And the truth is, Jesus is offering us that today. In His own words, He says, you will know the truth. And the truth will what? Let's say it again. It will set you free. Do you want to be free this morning? Do you want to be free of the sin that entangles your life? Do you want to be free of the worldly problems that are all around us? Do you want to be free of all of that to offer yourself to God, to receive forgiveness? Then I encourage you this morning to be baptized. Do you want to unburden your heart? Do you want to be free of guilt, of apathy? Do you want to be free of coming to church and putting on one face and then going out into the world and leaving it all behind and doing what you need to do and being who you think others need you to be? Or do you want to live as an alien? Do you want to live as someone who knows there is more truth in this world than you see around you? Whatever your needs are this morning, we would like to ask you to come while we stand and sing a song of invitation.